You're listening to Inside here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Del Paso Heights is one of Sacramento's oldest and most vibrant neighborhoods, with a history that is often overlooked today. The Del Paso Heights today is a dramatic departure from a time not too long ago of economic strength and opportunity, once full of shops, bustling with businesses, restaurants, a movie theater, healthy outlets to turn to. If you ask longtime residents, they'll point to reasons that stem from a lack of investment in what is now a predominantly low-income community of color that fueled a lack of opportunity and crime. A new documentary from KCRA is honing in on a pivotal flashpoint that shapes Del Paso Heights to this day, taking a hard look at how the introduction of crack cocaine led the area down a path of violence and drugs, and ongoing suffering that claimed generations now lost. The documentary is called Del Paso Heights, Cracking an Epidemic, and airs on KCRA tonight at 8 p.m. Jason Marks is with KCRA and the reporter behind the documentary. We also want to welcome Darris Hinson. He grew up in Del Paso Heights, attended Grant High, and is now principal at Grant. We also have Sacramento Police Chief Kathy Lester with us today. Del Paso Heights was once her beat as an officer. All right, we brought you here to learn about Del Paso Heights history, but this conversation is coinciding with a tragic violent week for this community. 11 people have been shot, 4 have died in multiple shootings in the span of 7 days in the North Sacramento area. So I just really have to begin by checking in on what's happening now. Darris, I want to start with you. You're a longtime resident. You're now principal at Grant High. I want to start with you. How are you doing?
I'm under the circumstances, I'm well. Thanks for asking. Yeah.
Chief Lester, what can you tell us about how the police department is responding?
You know, this is unfortunately yet another tragic series of events that we've experienced in our city, not just in the last week, but really over the last few years. We saw a really big spike in crime, but especially in violent crime, and including gun violence, you know, over the last few years. And so in the last year, we have really taken, I think a different approach to trying to reduce the violence, which isn't just strictly enforcement that you would expect from the police department, but we know that it has to be shared with the community. And we have great organizations in Sacramento that have been doing fantastic work for many years. And so we're taking really an initiative to partner with a lot of those organizations to see how we can support each other and keep those shootings from happening in the first place.
You know, Darris, you know, there is obviously news articles and coverage about this, but often when these trying moments happen in our community, what is often missing from the conversations and the coverage? I mean, these aren't just names in print. You know, they have loved ones. They're people in your community.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything missing in terms of, because these are around crime scene investigations, and there has to be the integrity of these scenes that so that the officers can do their work. So there isn't much missed in terms of the information. I think the perception is probably the thing that the community fights with the most. I think in any community, you have the residents that live there that really make up the heart and soul of the community. And then you have that small group of people that are responsible for carrying on the negative statistics of the community. And unfortunately, that small population of people can sometimes create the identity for the entire community. And so I think the biggest struggle is dealing with that and trying to find a way for the community to redeem its humanity and its identity in the face of very tragic events. If you were to talk to a resident of Del Paso Heights community, they would tell you that they don't feel unsafe, that they don't feel a part of the identity that's portrayed, but they are concerned because it is happening in the area where their children play or where our children play or where our elders are walking or are taking time, you know, just to be outside. So I think it's important to just recapture the identity of what the community really is and change the perception away from, without discounting the tragedy that's involved, but definitely away from the negativity that's associated with it sometimes.
As an educator, what is your role in this when this happens?
Well, when school is in and we have events like this, there's always a connection. There's that student that may come to school and they're just not in their sorts for the day. And we try to have what we call wraparound services for those students that extend all the way out into the family. So if they need to speak with a chaplain, if it's a truly traumatic or tragic situation, counselors. We have a community-informed wellness center on our campus. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago with neighborhood wellness. And so we have professionals on campus where at least our students and our staff can have a place where they can go and speak with someone. They can voice concerns. They can go through the healing in a therapeutic way. And that's one of the things that we would do. Fortunately, unfortunately, we are not in school right now. So this is not having a direct impact on the school community. But sometimes that's worse because the school is a primary resource in the community. And so if there are families that are hurting, that are in need of resources, we try to make sure that we have programs like Neighborhood Wellness, like Roberts Family Development Center, like Brother to Brother, EBC, just different organizations to provide those wraparound services out in the community because it's not happening right now on the campus.
And you can just see this is such a big part of your life. You went from a student at Grant High to a teacher to now principal. How has that journey been like for you?
It's been pretty seamless. So I graduated from Morehouse College, and one of the tenets of Morehouse College since even before Dr. King graduated from there is commitment to community. If we're going to train our next leaders, they should do that work within the community. So a lot of what I do doesn't feel like work because I'm working with generations of families that have always been there. And so I'm working with friends that I grew up with or relatives that I have a close personal relationship with or just families that have been a part of the community. One thing about Del Paso Heights is the families that have been there stayed there, and they also made sure that their kids went through and their kids went through. So my journey at Grant Union High School has been just a seamless transition. And my mentor, Larry Brown, was also a graduate of Grant Union High School. And so I had a good blueprint. And the school has had its best years when it has leadership that's connected directly to the community. Mm-hmm. So it's been a good experience for me.
You have called Grant High School the centerpiece of the community. Can you unpack that a little for us about the significance, you know, this place has for people who called Del Paso Heights home?
Yeah. You know, the school is 90 years old. I believe American River College started there. It's one of the first high schools to have a stadium with William Rutherford Stadium. It was a training facility in World War II. It got its name because it was a famous horse stable that raised Pacers, right? So there's this rich, deep history that's at Grant Union High School. And over the years, because of how city dynamics operate, it went from a community that had very vibrant businesses and very vibrant opportunities for entrepreneurship and things like that to a community that doesn't have anything. You can go 5 miles in any direction in Del Paso Heights, and you're not going to come across a Safeway or a Bel Air. You're not going to see a strip mall that has valuable resources that I think other communities take for granted. Like if you just go right over the bridge into Natomas, I mean, there's just a wealth of everything. So if you're a student at Intercom High School and you need a job, you literally can walk 2 blocks and there's a ton of jobs right there, just right across the street from the school. That's not the case at Grant. Our residents have to travel outside of the community to find viable employment. So if you're talking about a high school student looking to help his family what does that look like? If you're talking about parents trying to raise kids, what does that look like when you don't have resources within the community that you can help build and circulate the dollars within the community? So at this point, what we see with the rashes of violence and the things that happen are resource scarcity and what that looks like in everyday life with people having to make decisions under very stressful situations. And unfortunately, violence is a part of that. But then there are also other, like, mental health issues, like homelessness, like, you know, there are these other social ills that are in the community now. And it all stems back to a lack of economic growth, lack of resources. We don't even have an urgent care. So you think about the amount of violence that's reported coming out of a community. You have to travel to two different communities to get to a hospital or to get to urgent care. And with no real vision in sight for how that's going to change or what that's going to look like even 10 years from now. It hasn't happened in all of this time, and it's still not even on the discussion for anything in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, what you're saying is these aren't isolated issues. These are all rooms in the same house, right?
Yes. Yeah, very much so.
Chief Lester, what time were you an officer in this area?
I was, I came on the department in the mid-90s, and so I worked Graveyard and Del Paso Heights and Strawberry Manor for a long time, actually, and really want to just applaud the principal for the comments. He's absolutely right, and I think it's something that a lot of people do not understand. I can tell you, as a new officer, I didn't. I had no idea, you know, how that community had been affected. I came in really kind of during the middle of what the documentary highlights, a lot of violence, a lot of gang wars, you know, a lot of guns, and certainly a lot of drugs, and, you know, really families that were just broken up by that. And I think, like, this documentary in particular does a really good job of talking about that in a way that I think most people don't know. And when we look at communities, lots of times we look and see, like, what's wrong with them versus what's really good with them. And I think it's just natural for human beings. And it took me probably a decade or more of really building relationships with people in the community and really understanding how many really great people make up Del Paso Heights, for example. And it's all over the city. It's not just Del Paso Heights. And it's really just a small number of people that have a profound effect on the community. But it's not just that. I mean, we have traditionally underinvested in certain communities in Sacramento. And we continue and will continue to see the effects of what underinvestment looks like and not providing equitable resources to communities. And until those things change, we're, I think, going to be on the same trajectory, which is why I'm glad that we're having this conversation, because if you don't identify where the gaps are, can't fill them.
Yeah, the lack of opportunity, I mean, it has ripple effects and it spans generations. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio, and we're talking about a new KCRA documentary that's airing tonight. It is called Del Paso Heights, Cracking an Epidemic. Jason Marks is KCRA's reporter. Darris Hinson is principal at Grant High School. And we also have Sacramento Police Chief Kathy Lester. Okay, Jason, you are the reporter behind this documentary. You're also relatively new to Sacramento. What was your impression of Del Paso Heights before you started diving into the history?
So I'm new to Sacramento, but I'm not new to reporting. And so, you know, I grew up in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and Virginia Beach has areas around it that are just like Del Paso Heights. You look at Newport News, Virginia, or Hampton, Virginia, low-income minority communities that deal with the same situation as Del Paso. So I came here as a reporter covering whatever the story was. And unfortunately, a lot of times that happens to be crime. And a lot of times it's either Oak Park or Meadowview or Del Paso Heights. We had the K Street shooting that happened last year, which was obviously a tragic event. And the station said, hey, go and do stories about people in the community that are trying to combat crime, trying to reduce violence. And one of those stories happened to be in Del Paso Heights, dealing with Gina Warren, Dr. Gina Warren, and the Neighborhood Wellness Foundation. And she said to me, to look at the issue, you have to look at the root cause of the problem. And I said to her, what do you mean by that? And she said, you got to look at the crack cocaine epidemic and how that has impacted Del Paso Heights, and it's not just Del Paso Heights, how it's impacted lower-income minority communities all over this country. And so photojournalist Jack Noonan and myself started doing interviews with people like Darius and other people in the community that lived through that period. And here we are today. We put it together, and it's airing tonight. I mean, we're really proud of what we put together, and we found out that there are really great people who live in Del Paso Heights, but they're unfortunately surrounded by these really tragic circumstances.
Well, take us back to the 1960s, 1970s. What did you learn about Del Paso Heights, you know, back in its glory days?
Yeah, so as Darius was talking about, Del Paso Heights was mostly a white area to begin with, and it was the gateway to Sacramento. And you had Del Paso Boulevard, which was a vibrant area that had one of the first ice rinks in the area. There were restaurants, there were shopping. It was the place to go. And in that area, it was an area that allowed minorities to come. They didn't have restrictions, deed restrictions. So you could come and live there if you're a minority. And a lot of minorities went to work at McClellan Air Force Base. And there was a couple events that really shocked Del Paso Heights. You had a lot of the white families start moving out to suburban areas. You had McClellan shut down, which took away jobs. And then all of a sudden you had a Highway 160, the bypass built from which used to go right straight down Del Paso Boulevard, and it went towards Arden Mall. And so you had an issue where now the jobs and the businesses are now lacking because there is no business coming down Del Paso Boulevard, and it just essentially chokes the community. And that really started the problem, and it made it really ripe for when that drug came through in the mid-'80s.
Mm. You know, when I think of Del Paso Boulevard, I learned a lot about it when talking first with former police chief Daniel Hahn. I mean, I think of it as like a Folsom Boulevard. You know, it's like this corridor with lots of businesses. And then that just essentially became suffocated. It was cut off with Highway 160 and that development that takes you straight to Arden Fair Mall. You focus on the time of the 1980s, specifically around 1985 when crack cocaine was introduced. Darius, what do you remember about that time and the shift that happened in Del Paso Heights?
Oh, I can almost remember it to the day. So there's a popular TV show on now called Snowfall. And it covers the span of Freeway Ricky Ross, who was this drug dealer that went from Southern California down to the Bay Area, and he was one of the first distributors of crack cocaine statewide. Very popular show. Everybody's watching it. I can't watch it because it's pretty traumatic. So for that time period, talk about 1985, I'm 15 years old. I'm a sophomore at Grant Union High School. High school is a time where people are experimenting with drugs. At any high school, what I mean? Like, that's just what young
of
people
course.
Did at that time, and parents as well. And you have this highly addictive substance coming into the community, and people did not see it coming. And it wasn't just in Del Paso Heights. Within 2 years, you're talking about almost a global epidemic, but in an area where the resources are going out in this shift, and now this influx of this drug coming in, it took the economic place of the things that were being left out. And young people weren't necessarily the ones that were using it. They were the ones that were selling it. And so you got a lot of popular people. In some cases, it was athletes. In some case, it was entrepreneurs. It was could have been leaders in the community. All of a sudden, faced with where are the economics for this community going to come from? And it's no secret that there's some government responsibility that has to be taken place. But, you know, there's a train system that goes right through Del Paso Heights on the levee, backed by Silver Eagle. And so one of my vivid memories is that train would come through and there would be duffel bags of military issue weapons that were dropped off in that community. There were drugs dropped off in that community. Those things were not generated or produced in that community. they were brought in. And they were given to people who were in an economic crisis, and they sold it. And before you know it, you have zombies walking around in the community. You have high crime from people breaking in, trying to support their habit. You have the violence that comes from this street making more money than that street. This person, the jealousy, this person now all of a sudden has more and this family has less. There's resentment because you're turning my mother, my sister, my auntie, my brother, my cousin, my father, you're turning these people out, you're destroying their lives. So all in this small area. And then simultaneously you have the introduction of gang violence with the Bloods and Crips, also Norteño Sereño. So you have this separation now in the community, whereas before Del Paso Heights was all one community. Now it's Del Paso Heights, it's Strawberry Manors, it's Gardenland, it's, you know, it's sectioned off. And people are protecting whatever economic value they're getting out of those places where they live, and they're willing to do anything because the answer to doing anything is if you don't, you have nothing. And then you have the removal of people from the community doing long prison sentences, 20 and 30 years, three strikes laws. You have the disparity between powder cocaine and crack cocaine. Like, systemically, you have all these things that are also pummeling down on the community. So it's an inside destruction within the people and the residents, and then it's an outside pressure to push all of this negativity and violence and drugs and guns and everything in. And it has, the community now looks like what you see when a bomb drops. It's that disparity. It's that wasteland mentality. And now there's another wave because you have the opioid crisis. Now you have people coming from Yuba City and Redding and Marysville into Del Paso Heights. That would never happen back in 1985 when the crack epidemic first started. Now you have different cultures in the community. So you're talking about a span of 85 to 2023, talking about 28 years of constant negativity, more taken out than put in. Very few opportunities where leadership came in and actually did something to change the landscape of the community. Very few policies or very few legislation has come in that would change the trajectory of a community like Del Paso Heights. It's just been a constant torment. And that's really what I remember, like seeing that from the beginning to right now, it hasn't let up in terms of what that looks like, how that's reported, everything.
We're talking about systems that were put into place that contributed to these root causes. What does accountability look like?
Accountability for the residents looks like what the incarceration rate looks like, not just in, you know, out of Del Paso Heights, but in the United States. I just don't think this country does a good job of taking care of its most vulnerable citizens. Mm-hmm. And systemically, you have black men removed from the home. You have mothers left to raise children on their own. You have boys who, between the ages of 16 and 25, find themselves in a situation where they're going to be on some kind of monitoring, whether it's probation or parole, and what that looks like in terms of, if I'm on probation, now you can come to my house at will. I lose a lot of my rights as a citizen to privacy. There are just a lot of other dynamics that constantly push in systemically into a community as well.
Hmm. Jason, finally, what do you hope people take away from this? This documentary is airing tonight at 8 p.m.
Well, I think when we, you know, when we look at the violence that happens when you turn on the news every morning and you see a shooting in Del Paso Heights or in Oak Park or in Meadowview or other areas around Sacramento, I hope people will start to think about the root cause and start to realize that there need to be more resources that are put in these areas. You talk about when Natomas lost the Kings and the Kings moved to downtown. That was a big deal, right? So what did they do in Natomas? They built this state-of-the-art aquatic center, which hosts meets every other weekend, allows people from all over the country to come in and fill up hotels and eat at the restaurants. And then now what are they doing with that area? They're building this billion-dollar medical center. When there's a shooting that happens in Old Sacramento, what did the city do? They put up cameras. They put more enforcement out there. When the K Street shooting happened, look what happened. Look, K Street was a tragic thing, but you have that happening every day in Del Paso Heights, and yet we don't do the same focus on that. So I'm hoping that when people watch this, they not only see the people's stories and they hear what it was like living through that period, but I also hope that they sit back and go, as a citizen, A, it affects me. I live in East Sac, but you know what? This affects me, and we got to do more. Not all the resources can go to ESAC. It's got to be spread amongst the rest of the areas that need it the most.
Well, Jason, Darris, and Chief Lester, thank you so much for the time and just a really important conversation.
Thank you.
Jason Marks is with KCRA and a reporter for the documentary Del Paso Heights Cracking an Epidemic. You can watch it tonight at 8 p.m. Darris Hinson is the principal at Grant High, and Chief Kathy Lester is the chief of Sacramento Police. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.